everybody, Bill Buckmaster with you, my buddy Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. Today is Tuesday, June 16th, 2020. Tom, it's my half birthday.
Half birthday.
6 months towards.
A very merry on birthday to you.
See, I was just thinking about that. 6 months toward the next birthday, but we don't need to get there in any hurry. Well, maybe we do.
Is there an explanation called for here? You've got me totally confused.
In other words, halfway to the next birthday. Does that make any more sense?
I think I get where you're going.
All right.
Good luck.
We are bringing Southern Arizonans together on the radio right here in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio on 1030 Tucson's Voice. For trusted news talk, we have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. Podcasts available 24/7 at buckmastershow.com. Live line number 790-2040. Let's go now on the live line to the Buckmaster Show contributor on aviation, JetBlue Captain Jeff Lattice, a resident of Oro Valley. Captain Lattice, a highly decorated retired combat fighter pilot. Jeff flies the Airbus A320 and the A321 with nearly 20,000 hours of accident-free experience. Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Bill. Good afternoon.
We are seeing a slow but steady rise in domestic demand. How is that translating for the companies in terms of scheduling for July?
Well, from what I have seen, most of the major airlines are going to go to about a 50% schedule in July, that based on pre-COVID numbers. So there's going to be a fairly significant increase here mid-summer, and they're expecting about 60% August. Now, that's going to stall out and probably stay 70 or 80% for a lengthy period of time, though.
The load factors have been going up, and we've been seeing some of these folks that post pictures on social media that some of the flights are actually crowded. How does that happen? Is that because some flights are canceled and folks have to go on another flight? How is that happening?
Yeah, that's pretty much the problem people are going to run into. Even though it seems like there's less people flying, which is true. There's also many less airplanes that are flying the air, too. So the capacity is actually, for the number of airplanes that are flying, quite high, if that makes sense. So there's fewer seats. More people are wanting to fly now. And that causes airplanes to get full. Now, I will say most of the airlines do have a space requirement where they leave the middle seat open. So that also is a factor in this as well.
What are you noticing from your flights? Are you starting to see quite a bit of pickup?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I haven't flown since early May.
Wow. Okay.
Basically, because in May, we were still operating under a normal scheduling process for 100% schedule. In June, we reduced the number of trips, and most of the crew members went on what's known as reserve status. So we're able to fly, but we'll only fly when they need us to fly. In July, those numbers went up a little bit. For instance, I would have been on reserve this month, even though I'm 30% senior at Long Beach and I'm 10% senior overall in the company, I was still on reserve. In July, looking at about 50%. So I think it's picking up a little bit, and I am flying in July.
What are you telling people who are concerned about the air quality? And we've We've kind of addressed this before. I'd like today, Jeff, to kind of take a little deeper dive into the air quality system on the aircrafts. Could you address that for us?
Certainly. I'll try to be brief with it. On most airplanes, it's fairly complex because, and I'll try to simplify it, that air comes into the engine, right? Before it gets to the compressor stage or where you add fuel and everything, we bleed off some of that air right after it comes into the front of the engine. It gets compressed a little bit, and it goes through a mechanical cooling process by compressing it, expanding it, cooling it, and basically the pressure in the cabin is created by that pressure coming out of the engine. Now, that runs through filters, and that's what we're going to get to here. The filters on most U.S. aircraft are down to the 1 micron level. That's about the size of a COVID virus, essentially. So the air coming out of the vents of the airplane is exceptionally pure. Okay, maybe not 100%, but it's pretty pure. It's going to filter out most all, definitely bacteria. Most all the viruses get filtered out. That air in the cabin is also replaced about every 2 minutes.
Wow.
Okay, so it recycles, but there's still a lot of air that's going from inside the airplane to outside the airplane. So it happens pretty quickly. So you're not constantly breathing the same old air. So you're getting new air every 2 minutes.
Wow. So many people have these fears about their contamination. Is that more a case they're worried about perhaps someone coughing or sneezing very close to them?
Yeah, I think the biggest fear and what people need to be more cautious about is the proximity of another person. Even though that airflow is happening fairly quickly, you know, if you got somebody sitting in front of you or beside you that's, has a flu of some sort or another, a virus, I mean, you still stand a pretty good chance. That's the reason why just today, you know, it hit the news that most of the major airlines are going to mandatorily enforce face masks or risk being blacklisted. Essentially,
yeah.
You won't be able to fly on that airline ever again if you refuse to put your mask on. So for those who are traveling, make sure you have your mask. If you don't have a mask, the airline should provide you one, and you need to wear it from boarding to exiting the aircraft and all the time in between, except for maybe when you're getting a drink of water.
Now, I wonder if this is going to cause you some concerns as the captain of the ship. You'll be notified. I'm sure a crew member would notify you immediately if someone is not.
Oh, you bet.
Yeah, they are going to notify you, Jeff Lattice, that we've got a passenger who's could be combative. They could say, hey, it's my right. I'm not wearing a mask. What will your tactic be? Will you have to come back into the cabin? Or, I mean, you're a busy guy up there on the flight deck, but what will the protocol be, Jeff?
Well, it depends whether you're on the ground or in the air. Now, while we're flying, if somebody refuses, we call it noncompliance. It doesn't matter if you're not putting your mask on or you stay on your phone when told to turn it off or computer or whatever. If you're non-compliant, that is a federal law violation. And you can be fined up to $10,000
wow.
for being non-compliant. And you don't even have to do anything but just refuse what the flight crew is telling you to do. Another little aspect to all this, in the airplane, the laws are completely different than when you're on the street or in your home or whatever. And there is really only one authority on that aircraft, and that's the captain.
And that's you.
he has a lot of power. And now you're asking me what I would do personally. what we're supposed to do, from what I've gathered from, if we have somebody that refuses to wear a mask, we will give them due warning. And then once we land, that person will probably be met by some of our corporation security personnel, as well as, you know, some higher ups in the management side, and you will be blacklisted. So, you know, if you're on a two-way ticket, you're not going to get your flight back.
You better go rent a car if you're in that.
Yeah. And if you want to get hostile about this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You will be met not only by the local law authority at the airport that you land at or at a diversion airport, but you'll also be met by the FBI because it is a federal crime.
Okay.
And more than likely, you will end up in a federal holding tank for a while.
All right.
And even if you don't get the fine, it's very expensive because you're going to have to get a lawyer. That case is going to happen wherever that airplane landed at. So if you're in New York and the case is in California, you're going to have to get to California and deal with the court case. So the best deal is to just comply.
Yep, comply.
And you can write a complaint. Comply, and then you can complain later on.
All right. Wear your mask.
Wear your mask.
All right. Jeff, always a pleasure. Got to run. Thank you very much. Safe flying to you. Thanks a lot. Jeff Lattice talks with us. He's our contributor on aviation. Interesting information. He is the captain of the ship. He's got the authority. When they are in the air, it will be up to Captain Lattice. All right. We have Captain Shelley Fishman, captain of the financial markets, with us coming up on the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
And here he is, Shelly Fishman. Shelly, how is your day going? Did you get a workout in at your home gym today?
I did. Got a workout in. Oh, took a little walk. Watched the fire on the mountain a tiny bit.
And, oh, boy.
And so as I wasn't quite sure what it was, but you pointed it out that there's this orange kind of ring around the mountain. And
that's that fire retardant that was dropped last week. And, man, that was a valiant effort by our firefighters up there to kind of keep that from the luxury home development of Pima Canyon and some of the other northern foothills communities. The market still has a ways to go to make up for that big drop last week. Was that a 17 or 1800 point drop?
It was a lot.
A lot. Yeah.
And you know, the market is very volatile right now. It's acting completely irrationally. I'm beginning to read some explanations for why the market is doing these funny things. And, you know, some of it is just optimism. And some of it has to do with the fact that our economy is on life support right now. We're depending upon the Fed to contribute, essentially printing trillions of dollars of money by buying bonds. In fact, the Fed yesterday announced that they're going to start buying corporate bonds, and that will help liquidity into the private sector, which is very unusual for the Fed to do.
I was just going to ask you, is that a real rare thing for them to do?
I can't remember them having done it before.
Oh, wow.
But also keeping interest rates down at essentially zero, all of that is propping up the markets. The real question is it propping up the economy? And that's, of course, to be seen. Last week, the Fed chairman, Powell, came out and said, look, we're not going to have a V-shaped recovery, at least that's not very likely. We're going to have high unemployment, at least until the end of 2021, by which he means somewhere in the range of 8 to 12%. That's pretty high by recent standards. And then we get these events like we had today, where retail sales, which were forecast to go up in May about 7 or 8%, hiked up 17%. Now, that's 17% off of a very low number.
Yeah, but still, it does indicate there are people that want to go back and do some shopping.
There is clearly pent-up demand and people who want to get back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is this coronavirus is not cooperating.
No.
And it's not doing it in ways that are predictable. There are some places where you would have expected because of some of the demonstrations in the streets, and also some of the rules that have been relaxed, you would have expected to see peaks 2 weeks after that happened, and you're not seeing it. And in other places, you're seeing it tremendously. Here in Arizona, mm-hmm. for instance, it's getting to be critical right now. In Florida and in Texas.
Yeah.
So it's hard to really know where this thing is going. And that makes, you know, kind of just modulating your own personal activities. Where you shop, do you eat out, what do you do? Especially if you're, you know, getting up there in the 60s or 70s. And so you know that this virus, until we have really good mitigation, until we have a really good treatment regimen, and certainly a vaccine, that this could kill you. And you know, you can talk about statistics all you want, but you only have one life to die. And if you're
that's
the one,
for sure.
It's very, very scary.
And the market, even with that big drop last week, still is considerably off the lows of March.
It is. We're at, you know, in the $25,000 range right now. The market was peaking today at over 700 points up. We're down in the 350-point range last time I looked a couple of seconds ago. So what's happening, of course, is the market is looking for good news. But what we're beginning to experience, and this is very, very bizarre, is that the market pricing is getting to be affected by gamblers, by people who would normally spend their time, it's an addiction to risk. So you would spend their time betting on sports.
They've migrated over to the financial markets.
Exactly.
All the sports bettors have nothing to bet on.
And you say, well, how big can that
be? So now they're over.
It's huge because not only are they doing it, but they're doing it like day traders do it. So they're doing it, you know, 10 minutes here, 20 minutes there, 30 minutes there. And so it's showing a lot of volume. And it's really upsetting the computer stability that is normally built into pricing. So it's very hard to know how much of this is market professionals trying to establish reasonable prices for stocks based upon future profitability, or this is day traders playing, you know, quid pro quos with the market. And then, you know, the news is the news, and we are in this second-by-second news cycle, and so we're getting new information fed to us almost on a minute-by-minute basis, and the market is reacting to that as well. But I always have to come up with the, you know, the caveat that anytime we talk about the market is not the economy. They can be closely linked, and people like Larry Kudlow believe that the market presages what the economy will do. That's arguable, but the state of the economy is not what the where the market is right now. We're in a recession, a very deep recession right now, maybe even a depression. And our ability to climb out of this is going to be based upon what people do, how they spend money, how they feel comfortable coming back into the marketplace of spending, but also do they feel comfortable going back to work?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, right now, many companies are beginning to require that people coming into work sign a non-prosecution agreement where they agree not to sue their company or their employer if they get COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the companies in return are not giving them a quid pro quo, which says, and in return, we'll keep you safe by agreeing to obey all of the rules that are put out by the administration and the CDC. So it's a very one-sided thing, which makes me believe that a lot of people are going to be hesitant to go back to their jobs. And that, I think, is why the Fed chair is so cautious about saying that this recovery is going to happen as quickly as the administration is telling us they would like it to happen.
Boy, these sports can't come back soon enough to get some of these people over to the betting on the NBA and everything else. But they may not have baseball to kick around this year.
Yeah, baseball doesn't look like it's coming back. I mean, there's never a shortage of stuff to bet on.
Right.
But the market is easy. I mean, it's easy. You literally don't pay for trades in many online accounts, and you can trade to your heart's content. And now, I'm not recommending it.
No, of course not.
It's a gambler's game, not an investor's game.
Of course.
But it is affecting things, and it's building up this level of uncertainty as to what, in fact, does the market mean in relationship to the economy? Is there a direct correlation? And can we expect that the policies in the past of stimulus and some of the things the Fed's doing, will that stabilize things in the economy? And it's very hard to know when on a day-to-day basis some of the indicators are bumping around as wildly as they seem to be.
Shelley, a week from today, I will not be here. I'm taking vacation next week. What do you have planned next Tuesday?
Thank you for asking.
Mm-hmm.
So James Real, the program director of KUAT-FM, and I are going to do another full-hour show together. This will be our fifth.
Wow.
In the times you've taken vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a very interesting show. We're not going to do classical music.
Okay.
We're going to talk about how American music, American composers, and American public react to the music in times of crisis.
Ooh,
so we're going to look at the Civil War. Uh-huh. We're going to look at World War One. Uh-huh. We're going to look at World War Two, and we're going to look at the Great Depression. So those four, and of course it breaks down to four segments that we do when we do the whole hour. And we're going to look at what kind of music Americans listen to, what kind of music Americans are kind of thinking about as their mood changes with crisis. And, you know, kind of a spoiler alert, until the Vietnam War, American music tended to be, number one, patriotic, and number two, optimistic.
Mm, we could all use that right now.
And so we saw that in World War One. We saw it in World War Two, and not so much in the Civil War because that was, you know, so much internalized.
We'll look
forward to we're going to explain some of that. And, of course, we'll have musical examples to listen to as well.
Excellent. Change of pace here on the Buckmaster Show. Love it. That's next Tuesday with Shelley Fishman. Have a great week.
You too, Bill. And thanks. I won't see you, so enjoy your vacation.
Thank you.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. I'm Bill Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things is your go-to place for everything green on their beautiful 13-acre site. They have some amazing plants, and the service you will get there is outstanding. If one employee doesn't know the answer to your question, I can almost guarantee you that someone on the Green Things staff will be able to answer your gardening question. Green Things, 50 years and still growing. They're at 3384 East River Road, and you can find them at greenthingsaz.com. And, of course, ZocaloVillage.com. That's the website for Zocalo Village and all that great merchandise, much of it handcrafted from Mexico and Latin America. All right, now the Buckmaster Show turns to the Vice Mayor of the City of Tucson, Paul Cunningham, Democrat representing the 2nd Ward in the city. Mr. Cunningham, how are you, sir?
Hey, Bill, thanks for having me on.
Tell me a little bit about where you stand on this whole defund the police conversation.
Well, I think it's a long discussion. I think there's some merit to police reform. I don't know if I'm comfortable reconstituting the entire police department all on a whim. I think that's kind of a bad choice. You know, prior to this happening, the biggest complaint we got on the police department was response times. That was the number one concern we had, and we tried to respond to that by ensuring that we had proper patrol coverage and police coverage throughout the city. I think there's some police culture issues nationwide that certainly our department isn't exempt from, but I do think that our police department has been very proactive over the last 5 years and building the type of 21st century police department that all cities deserve. I think our police department is a forerunner to all the things that are coming. And I think that a lot of discussion needs to be kind of hashed out specifically on what it would look like. What would police reform look like? Well, if police reform would look like independent review boards, and police reform looks at like mandatory.
Paul, I hate to interrupt you, but you're moving around, or would you speak directly into the phone? We're getting, we can't hear what you're saying.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say that if police reform looks like independent review committees and citizens review boards, if police reform looks like mandatory training, and on a duty to intervene if police are not following proper protocols, if police reform looks like banning chokeholds and doing the policies recommended by the National Eight Can't Wait campaign, then our city's meeting all those. But there's still some more things. One of the things they talked about is prevention. I think that there is some room to work within the parameters of our current budget so that we do some more things on prevention. But we've got to flesh out what those programs look like and which ones are successful. I think there's some merit to talking about social service crisis response and having that incorporated into how we respond. And we have a MIS team. It's one of the best in the country. It's headed by Sergeant Jason Winsky, and they do an outstanding job. So, again, we've started it. If there's an opportunity to expand that type of policing, I think you do it. We also don't have a hot pursuit. We don't want to have hot pursuit. It risks collateral damage. And now with digital tracking and aerial surveillance, it's a lot easier that you don't have to do high-speed chases. And I think that's important. We also have some protocols with how we do shooting, and I think we've done a lot of the things that some of the police reforms are talking about, but we probably haven't done all of them. And some of them, and let's be honest, some of the reforms that people want may not be possible or may not make sense from a protect and serve standpoint. So we've got to take a look at everything, and I think it's more of a discussion. I don't think it's anything we can do with immediacy. I think there's a lot of community conversation that has to take place before you delve into changing, you know, 20-year-old policies on a whim. Though I will say that there's some of the more sensitive, well, obviously there are situations where that is important, but obviously on other situations that not so fast. There are some unintended consequences. So we want to be really thoughtful. We want to be very thorough in how we discuss and address police reform in this community.
All right, we're going to take actually the break early here, and then I'm going to have my producer, Tom Fairbanks, get on the phone with you and see if we can clear up this. It's a muffled kind of sound we're getting from your cell phone, so Tom's going to work with you. Hopefully we can
I'm in my office. I can call you on a landline.
Yeah, call me on a landline. Let's take the break right here. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA Board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios this Tuesday afternoon, a rather hot one. But again, it is mid-June, so some people actually had a little bit of rain over near Reed Park yesterday for a few minutes, a few drops, maybe not a few minutes, maybe a few seconds. Anyway, if you're looking to cool off, may I suggest a road trip over to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico? Tom Fairbanks, pull up the temperature. Do you have a quick, can you pull up Silver City's midday temperature? They are 1 hour ahead of us, so this would be their 1 o'clock reading in Silver City, and I bet it's going to be quite a bit cooler than Tucson, because today, just put in Silver City, New Mexico weather there, Tom, up at the Google search top of the, yeah, there you go, 83, and What are we, Tom, right now? We're about mid-90s, aren't we? Yeah. I mean, so, yeah. Whoa, 99. So there you go.
You mentioned it, and it bumps up to 100.
Whoa, it's 100. So that, you know, you got 15 degrees cooler in Silver City. A good starting place before you make your trip, southwestnewmexico.org for where to stay and all sorts of recreation ideas. Let's go back now to the vice mayor of the city of Tucson, and that is Paul Cunningham, Democrat, Ward 2. Paul, you were talking about police defunding. In effect, we've had de facto police defunding, haven't we? We've kind of been cutting police budgets for years here in town, haven't we?
Well, I mean, that's a bit of a misnomer. Remember, for the operations piece and the pension piece, I don't think we've ever actually cut the authorized budget. But we had one year where we adjusted the actual budget numbers, because what was happening was that we had a whole bunch of paper members of the force, where we were authorizing so many positions, but we weren't filling all those positions. We were using vacancy savings to do other programs. So when Chief Magnus came on that first year, he contracted his budget and tried to report a more real depiction of what his numbers were, and then we've been increasing funding for the last 3 years.
So where do you think that the city of Tucson has reached this, what they call the 8-point plan for police reform? It's only the city of Tucson and I think one other major city.
San Francisco is the only other city, and
yeah,
they were court ordered to do it. We weren't.
Uh-huh.
So we did it through our, like I said, if you really want to talk about police reform, Tucson's done a lot of it, a lot of the yeoman's job, actually, in making a better, a more effective, more community-driven police force. And we've tried to do the right things. To say that there isn't a culture in police and in certain departments around the country, and even a little bit in all departments that has some problems, I'd say, hey, you can't deny that. And you can't deny that culture can exist in just about any profession, but there's a lot worse ramifications when it occurs too prevalently in police departments. So we can have a discussion about police reform and talk about social service crisis response. We can have a discussion about police reform and talk about prevention and how to instill prevention. And so we talk about those things. And then we say, so what does prevention look like? Does it mean going into schools? Well, it doesn't mean, because the school safety program that we used to have was specifically on prevention and crime prevention. But it's kind of morphed, and SROs has become more enforcers on school campuses. But originally, SROs, their whole job was about prevention. I remember in the early 2000s, the school resource officers in Tucson had a band, and they dressed up in the McGruff costume, and they went to middle schools and taught elementary schools and talked songs about talking to strangers and not doing drugs. And so I think there's some, what are we doing with prevention, and what are we doing with community involvement? I think one of the things I'd love to see is actually detainee and officer mediation involvement after the arrest, like 2 or 3 years after the arrest, and possibly having some closure on the incident that brought the person to be incarcerated. I think that would be and maybe an opportunity for healing on both sides. And sometimes that arresting officer can be the person's greatest advocate. And I know that sounds kind of counterintuitive to what we believe, but in my experience working as a juvenile probation officer, I've seen that, where sometimes the person who's arrested somebody for a probation violation or whatever, later on you're their biggest advocate in helping them succeed. And that's the role you have. There's a dual role there that you have. And so I'd like to see that type of attitude but it's there's no silver bullet policy. There's no set of rules that can make behavior, that can mandate behavior and attitude towards people. Culture that has to change.
Paul, I want to switch topics here. We've had a record number of coronavirus cases today in Arizona. Obviously, a surge is going on in cases reported anyway. The city of Tucson is still pretty much under restrictions. Do you see any 4th of July celebration in this community this year?
We can have a 4th of July thing and fireworks and stuff as long as people are staying in their cars and social distancing. I'd really like it to see if everyone wore masks. I think that would help a lot. I think it would help a lot if everybody did wash in, wash out, and we had sanitization stations as you go in and as you leave, and they're not the same station. We need the people exiting to have their own station, the people entering have their own station. I think that would help the spread quite a bit, or help stop the spread quite a bit. The bottom line is that no one's going to feel safe and comfortable until we have a series of protocols and medications that are widely available that can lower mortality rates and lower lower the belief that you can get sick. And we just don't have those yet. And if we don't get them, we're going to be stuck kind of in this. At this point, it feels like a cloud just hanging over our heads.
Mm-hmm.
It's out there, and it is making everything worse. It's making the fires in Bighorn worse. It's making people are just choosing sides straight out on the defund or not defund, when really there's a lot of people that are on both sides of that issue. There's a lot of people that believe in police reform and want to see some changes, but also understand that the police have a role in society. And you know, the second and not only that, quite frankly, the reason that what we're suffering here is that we have the wrong president for a time like this. We have someone who is very divisive and very not into having any consensus building at all. And you know, people who know me and my dad and what we've thought about in this community forever is about consensus building and trying to be nice to everybody and listen to everybody. But when you draw a line in the sand and say, this is my side and this is it and this is all I'm going to do, it can be really hard to get any productive discussion. And so that's kind of where I find myself sometimes, where you talk to people and you're trying to do your job as a public servant. You're trying to lower the risk of a disease. You're trying to stop a fire from coming down a mountain. You're trying to ensure that people can protest peacefully in the streets, but there are people who own businesses nearby who are worried that their businesses will have or their property will have collateral damage, and you're trying to run that balance and do all those things as a public servant to help. And there's a contingent of people who are just completely unreasonable in the discussion, and that's where it becomes very difficult to build. And not only that, we can't get the people who are on the total opposite sides in the same room because of COVID to actually look each other in the eye, mm-hmm. and have that moment where maybe some perspective would help.
Yeah.
We can't spread that perspective right now. So it's a very, very, very challenging time.
No kidding.
Very challenging time for everybody. It's a very challenging time for public servants. It's a very challenging time for people. And I think, again, the more divisiveness we had and the more stubbornness we have, it's threatening whether or not we stay a nation, quite frankly.
Well, Paul, let me we have not opened up the pools and the parks and all of that. I could foresee the city actually not having any of that the whole summer. Could you see that?
No, I think we'll end up. So the pools, I mean, obviously there's some discussion on the pools in which there's obviously some discussion on the pools in that you can, if you're social distancing in a pool, but you're shedding. The virus isn't going to have a lot of the virus isn't going to do a lot.
So as far as
shedding in a pool, as long as you're social distancing,
right?
What I've been reading, I think there's an opportunity to open pools, playgrounds, kids. That's another discussion. I'd like to see our numbers go down a little bit, but again, we're in this situation where every day we get this new influx of cases, we're seeing a lower mortality rate. Now that may change because we've got more and more people hospitalized. And so if that mortality rate starts rising again, that's when we're in a really provocative situation. Even worse, if the mortality rate rises and we just don't have any treatment protocols or drugs or methods or even new breakthroughs, treatments that are available. I mean, it's great that they invent something, but if it's not available, then it's not going to help the survivability rate or the hospitalization rate.
Yeah, I mean, so, we're in 2020, the year that keeps giving bad things. It just goes on and on. You're right. It's like a big cloud hanging over everything. It's a mess.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's just one thing after another. I called it the last week. I've called it a three-ring circus with the fires, the COVID, and the protesting. And not that the protesting is bad, just that it takes a lot of resources from the police department. So it look, but it is what it is. And if we can, like, I want to also be the I'm of the belief that we can get through this, especially a city like Tucson. Like, Tucson has a much better we're much better equipped to handle this type of thing. So I'm really of the belief that Tucson can get through this, but it's not going to be easy.
No, it isn't. Very challenging times. We'll leave it at that, Paul Cunningham. Stay safe. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, Paul Cunningham, the vice mayor. Whoa, that right in my ear. Paul, you could have hung on just a few seconds there. Oh, I caught that in my ear. Anyway, that's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show on a Tuesday afternoon. Hope everybody stays safe. I'm Bill Buckmaster, Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show. Midweek edition tomorrow on The Buckmaster Show. We'll talk with Victoria Mazes, the executive director of the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine. She's always a great interview talking about health. Dave Ramsey is next. Have a great afternoon, everybody. Stay safe.